isn't there like an implicit counterfactual that like if we all just stopped finding it legitimate, that it would stop being the way it is? And I think this is the core of this kind of like, this is why I think Hannett and Forrest are like-minded in this way, that, and what makes it idealism, that if we all changed our minds,
yeah,
we all were like, this is enough.
Yes, that's the, yeah.
And it's not an, and it's not an easy claim to dismiss, because at the kind of structural level of reasoning in which they're talking about, that it is basically true, yeah, that if everyone in your workplace is like, we want to go on strike because we've decided this is unjustified,
mm-hmm,
in a way, yeah, like it is when people develop alternative justifications that, mm-hmm, things change. So it's not totally wrong, but I think it's the order of reasoning. Like, I think the claims about domination are like prior to this, like what makes it like, cause he says domination is like one species of just of power. And it's like, yeah, but domination implies coercion at a different level than this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, just to go back just to the union example, isn't it the case, first of all, that people, that it becomes like palpable that it is in people's interest to go on strike? And then you, again, to put it kind of crassly, then you scaffold on whatever justificatory framework you think is going to be the most powerful. But you know what I mean? The prime mover.
But he's like, this is the whole thing in the first chapter, is to suggest that like, okay, but you think that interest now is prior to justification, whereas he's going to say, the claim he's making, right, is that like some kind of justification is prior to what you even understand to be your interest.
Is it prior to the desire? Yeah, I don't know. No, you just go ahead. I'm thinking out loud. Yeah, I'm genuinely struggling with that. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I thought that this might happen. I think I'm warmer to the force than the rest of the group here. And that's fine. You don't have to join me on everything. But, I think what he means by justification, and this is why I think, you know, the idea that there can be good and bad reasons does a lot of work for him. Because, you know, for something to be justified to me, or for a particular justification to underwrite what I am doing, it actually, I think he doesn't think, you know, you need to think it is justified. I think he wants to say we can index power insofar as, you know, the justifications that another agent has supplant or, you know, override whatever Agent B's justifications might be. Mm-hmm. And that's why he uses this language of, you know, combine them to it. And so, you know, when Gil began with the example of, you know, when someone points a gun at you, you might think it is completely illegitimate for you to demand my wallet, you know, just because you have a gun. But, you know, the gun is meant to be, well, you are, of course, free to believe that. Maybe you want to, you know, exercise that freedom by reaching for the gun. But yeah, at that point, I won't have power over you. You've rejected my justifications. I still have force on my side. And so I think, you know, what he's trying to say here is something like this. And I think this goes to Owen's question. He thinks that justifications have a role in the motivation they play for us to do X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the motivation for why I do something like that, like listen to my boss, might not be because, you know, I think my boss is a good person or they are right, but I might understand that they have power over my livelihood. But contrarily, perhaps my boss does have this power over my livelihood, but, you know, I actually understand that the people around me, we also have, you know, the power to bind our boss to our justifications in terms of a strike, in terms of collective action, etc. He uses this, you know, interesting example of, you know, sometimes, you know, people are in an institutionally strong position might have relatively weak power if they're not able to bind others to their justifications. So I think what he's trying to isolate is, you know, what we are struggling over, and gets and it allows us to ask not only why certain agents do what they do, but, you know, how others are able to get some subset of agents who wouldn't normally want to do whatever they're doing to get them to do it, and to analyze, you know, what's going on there. I see Gil's making a face, but I don't know. I actually don't think that this is idealist in that sense. Uh-huh. I don't think he is saying, and maybe it's because of what I argue in the book, and you know, maybe you know, the realists are going to light me up, but whatever. I think I'm right.
Hell yeah.
I don't think he is saying it's just about the change of mind. The question would be whether alternative justifications that can bind others can emerge even after people see something is not legitimate. If no other justifications emerge, then I think, well, yeah, perhaps just inertia sets in. That's kind of where I'm coming from, and I see that's what I see him doing there.
Yeah, I think I like the thing that I think I'm stumbling on is I agree with you that like the difference between like good reasons and bad reasons or justified and unjustified reasons is doing a lot of work, but I actually don't know how to maintain that distinction. It feels sort of question beggy, where like there are reasonable reasons and unreasonable reasons or something like this.
And I'm generality like, and reciprocity, those are the criteria.
Those are the criteria, generality and reciprocity for a good reason, a normatively or a justified reason.
Yeah, I think
at least that's the principle.
Like the extent to which they're generalizable.
Yeah.
And reciprocally understandable, yeah.
Yeah, but again, but this isn't going to do the work that I think it needs to do, for instance, in, say, the example of the tank or in the moment that you described from the autobiography of Frederick Douglass, right? Like seeing a reasonable reason in no longer finding the threat of violence to be a binding thing for me in my action, right? We want to say something like, or in the moment where like a group of workers decides that, you know what, the threat of losing my job is not enough to deter me from going on strike and demanding an improvement in my working conditions. Where's the generality and reciprocity there that makes that more reasonable? That doesn't just like, I don't know, that doesn't just like appeal directly to, like these are all instances, here's I think what I want to say. These are all instances where like I intuitively am like, hell yeah, do that. Say no to the threat. Recognize that, like Lillian was saying, this is something that's happening in the space of reasons for me. I like that. That's the stuff I like, actually. But I'm not sure that those satisfy the criteria of generality and reciprocity in ways that say, yeah, you know what? Like, I don't know. You and I both recognize reciprocally that, like, if I shoot you, you die. Give me your wallet. You know what I mean?
So this is what I was saying about the real potential, like, realist critique, which I'm not wedded to. Like I said, like, I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, because actually I remember one time I was at a workshop and I actually was reading some of Forrest's stuff, and I like I think I out loud asked myself, like, wait, am I a Kantian now?
Like, yes!
Yeah, totally.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. This was just a small sample of the full episode. To listen to it and to access other premium content we're putting out, including all of our locked episodes and bonus videos, please subscribe to us on patreon.com/leftofphilosophy. See you next time.